Blog Talk Radio.
Television is a goddamn amusement park. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We're in the boredom-killing business. So if you want the truth, go to God. Go to your gurus. Go to yourselves. Because that's the only place you're ever going to find any real truth. So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off right now. Turn them off and leave them off. Turn them off right in the middle of a sentence I'm speaking to you now. Turn them off.
Come on.
All the humanity, all the...
Harry has a little man that speaks with white as snow. And everywhere that Harry went, the
man
was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool.
I never once said, na-da-da.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
It's 1 minute after the hour, top of the hour, on... maybe 11, 2012. I don't know whose birthday it is, but happy birthday to you. I know there's somebody that I know that I'm remotely involved with that I may know, may remember. Maybe I don't remember. I personally don't care. But I'm just going to let you know, happy birthday in the event that I forgot it. And I'll send this, happy birthday well wish to you when I find out who it is that you are. I know your birthday's today. Just want to make sure I bring
that
up.
Random.
Yeah, it was random. Because I know today is somebody's birthday. Well, of course, it's everybody. Somebody's birthday today. Of course. But talking about somebody personally in my life, it's somebody's birthday. Anyway, maybe 11, 2012.
It can't be that personal in your life if you don't even know who it is.
I have a tendency to forget some people who are nondescript in my life and forget their birthdays.
No,
people who matter to...
If they're nondescript in your life and they don't really matter, then there's no point on pointing
out. See, my brain doesn't work. My brain doesn't work like that. My brain works that if I think of somebody's birthday, if I know your birthday, if you've ever told me your birthday was on a particular day, my mind works to remind me of that particular day. Even though I may not remember who you are, I know your birthday is today. So it's a part of my brain saying, hey, Reese, remember that guy... that girl, whoever it was, you met them probably at a party for 15 minutes. They were probably a snob. They told you their birthday was today. Yeah, my brain will not let that go. To me, that's not brain garbage. I don't know why, but my brain keeps that stuff. So I'm saying, if you're wondering if I forgot, I didn't mean to forget, but I remembered, in essence, because I know you are out there, and I'm wishing you a happy birthday. Do you get it?
Is this an attempt to have... hundreds of people thinking, today's birthday, is he talking about me?
They might. I don't know. It's not my attempt. But whatever. Ah. I'm sorry. Something weird. Anyway. I want to talk about something a little odd the first half of the show. The first quarter of the show, I should say. J.P. Morgan Chase. Now, it's not very often we talk about the business world on Reese on the Radio. Unless it's about corporations that are, that really impact our lives culturally. Facebook, Apple, things like that. J.P. Morgan Chase is not a company I would generally talk about. Like, I wouldn't be talking about Merrill Lynch. There's a reason why I'm talking about J.P. Morgan today, and here's why. And if you've heard the story, you know what it is that I'm talking about. J.P. Morgan Chase has now got a Securities and Exchange Commission investigation going into how the hell they lost $2 billion in 6 days of their stockholders' money. Even with all the regulation, Barney Frank and Chris Dodd, it's called the Frank Dodd or the Dodd-Frank regulations, how did these people lose investors' money to the tune of $2 billion? And the guy who runs J.P. Morgan Chase, the largest banking firm in the country, Mr. Diamond, he's now, you know, he's owning up. That something we did, we screwed up. And we lost $2 billion. Let me let you in on a little inside information on the whole J.P. Morgan thing. Let me tell you this, because the rest of the news reporters won't tell you this. J.P. Morgan Chase is infested with a bunch of scumbags. The whole lot of them are pieces of garbage. Now, Reese, how do you know that? You have no financial history. You never worked in an investment bank. No. I worked at the lowest possible denominator involved with J.P. Morgan Chase. I was their black card dispatcher last year. That's right. J.P. Morgan Chase was our primary account at the car service, the black car service I used to work at last year. J.P. Morgan was the bane of the existence of every one of our black car driver. All 300 of them. They hate J.P. Morgan Chase. Now, I want you to put this in perspective, because you know the old adage, folks. If you want to know somebody's dirty secrets, go to the help. There's a great line in the movie The Breakfast Club, when Judd Nelson's character, Bender, is making fun of the school janitor. And the janitor says to him, "What do you guys think? I'm some joke? I'm just some peon? I am the eyes and ears of this institution. I go through your trash. I go through your lockers. I know everything that's going on here." And they all look stunned. That's right. Your dirty little secrets were right there on the person who they called a troll. So I was their dispatcher. And let me give you a little breakdown of the people at J.P. Morgan Chase when they call you up and they want a car. "Hey, hi. This is Rosita over at J.P. Morgan Chase. Listen, can I get a car at 6 o'clock? "Well, I'm afraid that I won't have a car available at 6 o'clock." "What do you mean you don't have a car?" "Well, it's 5:45, Rosita. We're in the city of Manhattan. I'm not going to be able to get you a car in 15 minutes. "Well, why can't you get me a car in 15 minutes? Well, let me explain it to you, Rosita. We're a 350 car fleet. There are 4,000 or 5,000 people who work at J.P. Morgan Chase. You're our number one account. You're calling us at 5:45 at the end of business hours, and you think that I'm going to be able to pick you up in 15 minutes. This is completely unacceptable. I'm going to call somebody and have our account removed from your company." "I'm sorry, we're not doing enough for you, Rosita? You already get a 20% discount from the average rate of car service because we take the thousands of employees that work in your New York office. In order for you to work with us, our drivers already take a 20% cut of the average rate. If we take you, let me give you a perfect example. We take you 20 blocks. The driver has to charge you a flat rate of $12 to get you there. And you don't have to tip them." This is the scumbag type of mentality that people at J.P. Morgan Chase. The only money that they're concerned about is their own. So stockholders' money, they don't give two craps about. I mean, we're talking about the largest bank in the continental United States. Well, I shouldn't say the continental, but in the United States. In the 50 states. These people use a car service everywhere. I'll give you another example. If you're familiar with Long Island or you're familiar with Atlantic City, let me give you what the average rate. Going from New York City to Atlantic City is about a 2 hour and 15 to 2 hour and 30 minute drive. The average rate to drive 2.5 hours in a town car, the average rate is $325. That's the average rate today considering inflation, and I haven't even thrown in gas prices. My drivers are independent contractors. Independent contractors. That means they pay for their own gas out of their paycheck. They drive 2.5 hours. God forbid if there's traffic. Down to Atlantic City or up to Mystic, Connecticut, another 2.5. We're talking south to north. And J.P. Morgan Chase pays $220 for the ride. And if you can't get a car for them in the time that they ask for it, they will bitch and moan and scream and holler. So I'm not stunned that they would be a part of a Security and Exchange Commission investigation after losing some $2 billion in 6 weeks. Because, as I already mentioned, they're scumbags. Now, you've heard all the rigmarole made by the Occupy Wall Street movement. The banks suck, the banks suck, the banks suck, the bank sucks. Well, you know what? On this one, I'm on board with the Occupy Wall Street movement. These people are pieces of garbage. I want them investigated. I want flashlights and microscopes in the rectum. I want to know whether or not they have polyps. I want everything.
You're getting a little crazy.
I want everything investigated by these guys. Because I've got a personal vendetta against them. And it's nice to know that somebody is out there checking them where it belongs. That's it. I wouldn't say that about any other company out there because I don't know. And we've dealt, this company that I work for, we've dealt with other banking companies before. Barclays, we dealt with them. They're our clients. But J.P. Morgan Chase, drivers would tell me off the bat from the get-go, they would tell me. I would call them up and I'd say, hey, do me a favor. I need you to make a pickup in Connecticut right now. Can you make it out to Greenwich, Connecticut? Make a pickup for me? Yeah, I could do it, but is it a Chase job? Ugh. Yeah, it's a Chase job. Reese, give it to somebody else. Yeah, but come on, man. It's a good job. Look, man, if I pick up any other client from Greenwich, Connecticut, which is only 90 minutes away, if I go out there and I go pick up somebody from Greenwich, Connecticut, and I drive them all the way down to JFK, you know, I make that pickup, you know, in my pocket. That's, you know, I can get $200 for that. $200 for that. It's $90 with J.P. Morgan Chase. $90. $90, folks. If you think I'm kidding, call your local car service. Call your local car service as a regular person. Call them and ask them to pick you up from where you are. Pick any spot on the map that's 2 hours away. Pick any spot on the map 2 hours away. See how much money it costs. J.P. Morgan Chase said that they were here's the scary part. Here's the scary part. They were the majority of our work as far as dispatching. For the entire company, they were our majority client. We had to turn down other clients who were paying top dollar in order to appease these people. I'm ranting, JC. What do you got to say? I'm ranting right now.
I totally agree with you.
Okay, that's
on,
right.
No,
you
on
know,
a personal level.
You know this business. Go for it.
Mingo Jackson. Windsor, Connecticut,
mm-hmm.
A Chase executive. We used to have to take him from Windsor, Connecticut, down to Manhattan.
Okay, yeah. Oh, I know that well. I know that ride well.
And he wants that ride. He didn't want a stretch. He wants a town car.
Right, he wants a black car. Always
wants. Or he wants an executive sedan if a town car is not available.
Yeah,
but he always wants a town car.
Got him a black Cadillac or one of the executive sort of Mercedes Benzes and stuff like that.
Right.
Which is a specialty race.
He wanted it there yesterday.
Always. And they always call last minute, don't they?
Mm-hmm. On a Sunday.
On a Sunday. That's my favorite one. On a Sunday, when I only have a quarter staff, as far as drivers are concerned, they're asking me to, now, my drivers are generally hanging out in Manhattan. These guys want me to pick them up in Parsippany, New Jersey, or Piscataway.
Or as I like to affectionately refer to it as Piss That Away, New Jersey. But Piscataway, New Jersey, they want the guy, hey, you got a guy sitting out here in Piscataway?
Of course I don't. How long is it going to take? I'll ask a driver. All right, anybody give me ETA to Piscataway, New Jersey? Guy calling and saying, give me 45 minutes.
I give the guy 45 minutes and that's too long.
I'll call the local guy. I mean, what would make you think we're a Manhattan company? To call, you think I got a driver sitting in Piscataway because you may call? And this is how they operate.
I've always hated it. I just always hated the customers in this business. But that being said, this is who J.P. Morgan Chase is. Did you deal with them on a regular basis?
I dealt with them all the time. They were 80% of my business.
No, they weren't our executive account, but they were probably about 10% of ours.
Oh, wow. I would have loved to if you have, you know, that rate.
they were about 10% of our business, and they were still snobby, but I mean those companies like that in general, and executives like that, especially if they're getting a discount, I mean they're horrible. I think my worst client, and he was probably not even 5% of our business, was Daryl Bell. Rings a bell?
Why does he ring a bell?
Different world. Dwayne's little buddy, Ron.
Ha ha! That does sound familiar. That's the light skinned dude with the Hitler mustache and glasses.
That's him. Got a call from him from Avon Mountain.
Avon was one of my clients.
What, your client was from Avon?
Yeah, we had the Avon account. We had Scripps Networks, the people who do the, you know, all the television shows. We had a Food Network was of course a part of that. I'll never forget when I got this phone call. One of these guys, I don't know who he is. Someone's going to tell me who he is. I know I'm going to get an email about it. But he's the guy who's the bald guy on that TV show on ABC called The Chew. He's a chef. The Food Network is one of our clients. I get this phone call. I'll never forget it last year. And a girl calls me up, and she's one of those giggly Tiffany types. Hi.
Becky's.
Yeah, well, I hate that term because a lot of these, you know, rappers, she's a Tiffany type. But she gets on the phone, and she's like, hi, could you pick up one of our guys? He's going to be on the corner of such a – ma'am, no offense, but we don't really pick up on street corners. We're an executive car service. This isn't, you know, Telemundo cab. Oh, I don't know the address. Can you give me a second? Sure,
give the address. No problem.
So she gets back on the phone, and then she goes, okay, could you do me a favor? It's a very, very nice car with a nice driver.
Ma'am, we are a black car service. All of our drivers are professional.
Okay, I just want to make sure because, you know, he's a very, very important star. He's very important. And so I said, sure, I'll make the reservation. And I'm the dispatcher taking a reservation, which I shouldn't even be doing in the first place. One of my lackeys is supposed to be doing this. But I'm helping them out on the phone. And old Giggly is on the phone. Yeah, who's there? What's that? And his name is like David something or a cross or a croc or a crack. I don't know what his name is, but he's one of those guys. He's bald head. He's on that TV show, The Chew. But anyway, he's that guy. And so when she gives me his name and I don't recognize him and I'm in the media business, if I don't recognize your name, you're a nobody. And she calls up and she gives me this ridiculous story. Oh, yeah, he's got a good run. Come on. And she can't stop yammering on like a college student about how important it is that he gets from one oven to another. You know,
Look, I don't make this much beef about my broad getting into the house to cook me a meatloaf. But they're really excited about this guy going from one souffle to a big zucchini. I don't know what it is. But she can't stop yammering about this.
Was it Michael Simon?
That's him. That's the guy. That's the guy. Michael Simon. Never forget it. Okay, I would always forget his name because he's a nobody. But anyway, Michael Simon, the ball-headed guy, right? That's him.
Right, right.
Okay. So, yeah, he wears a lot of plaid.
Yeah, that's
Michael Simon. Does he dress like a chef? Whatever.
He's an Iron Chef.
Yeah. Is he an Iron Chef?
Yeah, yes.
Is that significant?
Yeah, that's pretty big.
Is it a big deal in the foodie world?
Yes.
Yeah, it is.
Really?
Yeah, it is. It's pretty big.
Seriously?
Yes.
Yeah, it is.
They can lick my balsamic vinegar. That's the way I feel about it. Anyway, let me move on. So she's screaming on about this. Well, she's not screaming. She's just yammering like a school kid. She can't stop talking. And, you know, she wants me to assure her that the driver's a good driver, that he'll get them there safe. I'm sitting up there going, look, it's not going on a roller coaster, for crying out loud. This isn't like, you know, Five Fingers of Death. We're just going to get him in a car and drive him from one place to another. Does this guy drive anywhere? Relax. Now, and not only that, not only does she want me to do it, she wants me to guarantee that not only that he's picked up. Now, this, I have to tell you why I can't forget this whole thing. She wants me to call her when he's picked up. Call me when he's dropped off. Look, I've never, ever acted like this since my stepdaughter got her first cell phone and wanted to go to Temple by herself for the first time when she was 10. I told her, okay, you do me a favor, okay? You call me when you get to the bus stop. You call me when you get on the bus. You call me when you get off the bus. You call me when you get in front of the temple. And when you get out of the synagogue, you make sure that you call me when you get out of the synagogue. Call me when you're at the bus stop. Call me when you get in the bus. Call me when you get off the bus. Tell me when you get down in the corner. Tell me when you're coming around the corner. Now that I would do if it were a 10-year-old. This is a goddamn chef. And I'm supposed to stop what it is that I'm doing, but this is what people were like. And that's the worst part. She was nice about it. She was, because, I mean, she was cute and bubbly, and it was obviously she's a young girl. She really wants to please her boss. I get that. I mean, I totally, you know, I get that. I'm not really berating her because I understand where she's coming from. But imagine a kind version of that and then take it to the evil, morbid, you know, ridiculous, cantankerous bullcrap of J.P. Morgan Chase. Just imagine the most evil side of that kind of sort of, you know, micromanaging that J.P. Morgan Chase was. This was a nice girl because during the whole time I didn't tell her, hey, Missy, shut your freaking mouth, which I totally would have done. But I just kind of laughed and giggled and I said, okay, I get it. It's all right. No problem. It's all right. It's all right. It's all right. I tried to reassure her because to me it felt like the girl was going to have a heart attack at 22. And all that from Michael Simon. So the guy that J.P. Morgan Chase, I hope to God the SEC finds you. I want to see people in handcuffs, the Treasury Department hauling your ass out like they did Irv Gotti and the people over at Murder, Inc. I want you looking like that. I want to see FBI, SEC. I want to see with the blue coats with the yellow letters on the back of them. I want to see it all. I want them traipsing your asses out there. And you better not be somebody I ever had to take care of when I was working at the limousine company. I just want to make that point.
Hey, you know, a quick note
before
we move on? Finishing up the Dale Bell story real quickly. I did manage to get him a car within 15 minutes because we did have a driver.
In Connecticut, you got him a car in 15 minutes?
Yeah, the driver that lived in Simsbury.
Which you had to drag the driver out of his house, right?
Yeah.
I always hated doing that.
They don't like it, but this guy, he was a real...
He was a worker bee.
Yeah, a worker bee,
yeah. And I love that. Those are some of my favorite drivers, man, when I worked in Black Car. The guys who were worker bees, man, it didn't get... These guys would come out on Mother's Day, man.
Yeah, they would. They would. Even on Christmas, they would. They had to.
Come out on Christmas, come out on their, you know, and during their baby's christening, man. I would call up a guy. I'll never forget the best story ever. This is my favorite story. We'll go to a break. My favorite story ever, and I'll never forget it. One of my best friends is another guy named Jamie. And Jamie
worked in car service all of his life. That's his hustle. And he's a car service driver. His son went to this dramatic school, high school, in Upper Manhattan. His son was in a performance of Free to Be You and Me, or some one of those things. I'm almost certain that's the name of the play. Free to Be You and Me. We are sitting there watching this play. I went down to go see him because I've known his son since he was like 9 years old. Son's 13 doing his first dramatic play, his first performance, and we're there. In the middle of the performance, Jamie's phone goes off. We're in the top row of the bleachers. The place is pitch black and quiet. His phone rings at the most annoying freaking sound, and he has to climb down the bleachers through people and talk to a client on the phone while he's walking down there, and he completely disrupts the play. He gets out. It's only me, the girl that I'm dating at the time, and him and his son. He got in his car and drove off and went to go pick up the client. When he came back and the play was over, I looked at Jamie right in his face and I said, if anyone tells you that you are the greatest father in the world, you punch him in the effing face.
Wow.
Because I couldn't believe he left his son to go pick up a client. That
yeah, we had guys that did that all the time. But let me quickly finish that before we go to commercial.
Yeah.
I got him in the car in 15 minutes, and, you know, talking to him the whole time because he kept calling back every 2 to 3 minutes. And I'm like, you know, we're just chit-chatting. And he wasn't too bad, but he was a little demanding. So, well, you know, we got to get something. I asked him, where was he going up in New York? He said he was going to, I forget the name, it's a chocolate factory that he got from his father. It was a chocolate factory. I said, oh, wow.
That
okay,
he inherited it from his dad?
Yeah, he inherited it from his dad. And I said, wow, okay, cool, chocolate. He says, well, I'll send you some samples. Just get them here. He sent me 1,800 $1 bars. You know, they did the $1 bars that the kids do in school?
Yeah.
Those fundraisers? He sent me 1,800 of them, cases and cases of them, of the chocolate crunch, the all chocolate, and the chocolate almond.
Wow. I have to admit, though, as a dispatcher, I got the most complaints because I wasn't very nice to the clients. I wasn't.
Oh.
I was.
I had Rod Stewart tip my driver a half bottle of whiskey.
A half bottle of whiskey?
A half bottle.
That's actually not bad. I would have taken some Rod Stewart leftover whiskey. Why not?
Listen, dude, we did the MTV tour. I told you I was there stage side when the Milli Vanilli tape broke in Bristol at Lake Compound.
Are you serious?
Yeah, we did that tour. We did all of the tours for the whole summer. Caught a limousine.
All right, let's take a break. All right, when we come back, I got a whole bunch of news to talk about. Trayvon Martin's mom cut a commercial, folks.
Got a new music bed, too.
Every day
I get one in there.
Okay, no problem. But Trayvon Martin's mom cut a commercial. We'll talk about it when we get back right here on Reason Radio. Stick around.
Stay right where you are. Don't go anywhere. Reason Radio returns in a moment right here on blogtalkradio.com.
The Obama attack machine has started, spending millions to sling mud or oil at Mitt Romney. Why? Because in the 5 states where Obama's attacking Romney, gas prices have roughly doubled. But Obama's mud can't cover up his failed energy policies, policies that are hurting small businesses and working families. America deserves solutions, not attack ads covering up Obama's failures. 4 years of failed leadership are all we can afford. Send a message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Bleu.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hey,
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're Robert Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said, because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
This is the real state of our union. But you won't hear stories like those at President Obama's address tonight. The unemployed don't get tickets to sit next to the First Lady. Instead tonight, the President will do what he does best. He'll give a nice speech.
The idea of America endures.
A lot of memorable phrases in it.
That our future is hopeful.
But he won't give you the hard numbers.
Our journey goes forward. State of our union is strong.
3 years ago, we measured candidate Obama by his hopeful promises and his slogans. Today, President Obama has amassed an actual record of debt, decline, and disappointment. I'd use the State of the Union to lay out an agenda that will get our country back on track and get our fiscal house in order. We need to nominate someone who is an experienced leader, who has the qualities of leadership, the character, the judgment, the seriousness, the sobriety, the capacity demonstrated time and time again as a leader to help guide our party at a critical time and make sure that we hold on to the House, that we capture the Senate, and that we get back the White House and restore to America what is rightfully ours, a great nation, united, free, and prosperous for our kids and for their kids. Thank you so very much.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem. You deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reason Radio on blogtalkradio.com. Weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
President Barack Obama named himself one of the country's four best presidents. Better than George Washington, John F. Kennedy, and even Ronald Reagan. But Mr. President was just being modest. He's in fact America's best president at piling on debt. So good that he has managed to pile on nearly as much debt as all the previous presidents combined. All he needed was just 4 years to outspend 220 years of history. We can't afford four more years of America's best president.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right, ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.reeseontheradio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Come on, players, stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating. Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby. Twinkle, twinkle.
On the radio, we're back. 8:34 is your time, 34 minutes after the hour on Blog Talk Radio. May 11th, 2012. I'm still trying to figure out why Adam Carolla is on the O'Reilly Factor talking about enhanced interrogation. It makes no sense. Oh, he's got a new book out. It's called In 50 Years We'll All Be Chicks. I actually like that title. Anyway, so as many know, there hasn't been a lot of Trayvon Martin news. There hasn't been a lot of George Zimmerman news. In fact, I believe a court date's coming up in the next couple of weeks. In fact, I believe it's, if not a day before, a day after the next time I go to court. which will be the 30th of this month. But this story struck me as odd because I don't think this is exactly appropriate to do. According to Reuters, they say the mother of Florida shooting victim Trayvon Martin appears in a Mother's Day gun control video produced by an advocacy group led by New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg. I hate it when they always have to repeat the story. Martin, 17 years old, February 26, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, Florida, which has some of the most lenient gun laws in the nation, enacted a self-defense measure in 2005, which provides people wide latitude to use deadly force if they fear bodily harm. The law is now in effect in more than 20 states. Noting that this will be my first Mother's Day without my son, Trayvon, Sabrina Fulton asked, viewers to urge their state governors to re-examine similar stand-your-ground laws throughout the nation and keep our families safe. Quote, nobody can bring our children back. Quote, but it would bring us comfort if we could help spare other mothers the pain that we will feel on Mother's Day and every day for the rest of our lives. Now, I sadly have to say that Sabrina Fulton is ignorant because she is ignorant to the facts. And I will suggest that what she is doing is a knee-jerk reaction to the death of her son, tragic as it is. But that has got nothing to do with what the facts are. We do not make any assessment of people's right to bear arms because someone dies. That's not the way we do things. We must deal with what is a constitutional right in this country, and that is the right to bear arms. Now, be that as it may, no one can suggest, no one can determine whether or not her son did anything wrong. Well, he wasn't doing anything wrong. We do know that. He was allowed in that area. But his death, as sad as they may be, as sad as that may be, has got nothing to do with the rest of the country. Because to counter that, we can go into plenty of situations where people are breaking into others' homes, and other states have suggested that you leave your home if it's broken in by an intruder. Allow them to ransack your belongings. As if to say that your property is no longer your own, that you must succumb to the whims of a criminal, a scumbag, a piece of garbage. Stricter gun laws only prevent people from protecting what is their own. And that's what the gun law is about. That's what gun rights are about. Protecting what is yours. Be that your right to happiness, to live, to survive. Ms. Fulton is also not aware of the fact that every state in this country that does not have strict gun laws has a lower crime rate. That is a fact. Because a lunatic, a fool, a thug, a mugger, a robber, a killer has second thoughts about breaking into someone's home because they know, hey, the son of a bitch may have a gun too, and I'm risking my life. Unless the guy's a maniac and he's just going in there to kill, but most of these people who are going there unarmed are going in there to rob, to use the gun to scare people, to get what it is that they want. And if a thug thinks that he is going to be challenged by a person who may have a gun in a state that allows them to carry a gun, know that he runs a higher risk of losing his life over a VCR or a flat screen TV. It is quite clear that people like Ms. Fulton do not understand that, probably because she does not own a gun and because she is a woman, a black woman. And she's seeing this through her own personal window, and I grant her that. But stricter gun laws, and look at all the states that have them. Philadelphia, state of Pennsylvania, stricter gun laws.
Look at Chicago. Stricter gun laws. Look at those places. Detroit, stricter gun laws. Every place where there's strict gun laws. And people act like, what, Chicago doesn't have strict gun laws? Chicago, Illinois has this, one of the strictest gun laws ever. And look at South Chicago. Look at West Chicago. There were 70 people shot on a weekend. On a weekend. And they've got some of the strictest gun laws ever. The states that don't have them don't. They don't have these rampant shootings all over the place. Now, I know I'm going to be challenged, so I can't just sit up here and pontificate. So let's get some reaction from our intrepid crew. Hasn't been here in a long time. Kool-Aid Man, James Montgomery, and, of course, our good friend Derek the Bounty Hunter, who's in the state of Florida, where they have the Stand Your Ground law. Gentlemen, where am I wrong? Where am I going nuts?
I'm on.
Yeah, we'll let Derek go first.
Okay, Reese. You're equating Trayvon to some type of thug. Trayvon doesn't have any criminal background, number one.
Excuse me, if you were if you listened to my earlier statement, I made that clear. I'm not talking about Trayvon, I'm talking about gun laws in general.
Yeah,
I also address that Ms. Fulton is coming from a personal perspective. I made that very clear, and I said she's granted that. So deal with what it is that I said about gun laws.
Yeah, okay. We're talking about gun laws here. There's a neighborhood down here in Orlando. Remember, I live in Disney World, right? We have a neighborhood down here named Paramore. It's the number 25 most dangerous neighborhood in America, right? Which makes it way, way, way more dangerous than any neighborhood in New York City. Do you understand what I'm talking about here? All right? And this place with these liberal gun laws, okay? We have a neighborhood down here that you have a 1 in 10 chance of something happening to you at any given time.
One neighborhood?
All right, more dangerous than any neighborhood in New York.
Wait. But what about the rest of the state? Is your state amongst the highest of gun violence by unlicensed gun owners? Yes or no?
It's
a yes or no question.
You talked about cities that cities that have strict gun laws have more crime. Like,
yes.
I tell you, that's BS because Paramore is more dangerous than.
Wait a minute. You can't be ranked number 25 and be worse than any other city in New York.
Let me tell you that. New York has no city, no neighborhood on that top 25 list. None. You understand what I'm saying? Paramore here in Orlando is more dangerous than every neighborhood in New York City, and we have these liberal gun laws, dude.
How many violent attacks that involve a gun take place in New York City? It's an average of 350 for the past 5 years.
New York was not on that list at all. And then you're sitting over here talking about, you right to carry and everything. You want to sit over here and tell me you really want George Zimmerman to be the security guard in your neighborhood? That's the guy you really want. You're telling me after all this, that's the guy you want to guard your neighborhood? Shoot, I should be able to shoot everybody who I think has a threat to me. Everybody.
Wait. Derek, you're off your rocker here. Because the George Zimmerman case is an isolated case, and if you're taking George Zimmerman as now being being what it is that you're considering the template for every other state, if you're talking about one separate incident being the reason why there should be stricter gun laws across the globe? I mean, across the country? Are you taking one incident? Really? Are you saying one Trayvon Martin shooting can now tell the rest of the country that they need stricter gun laws? Is that really how it works? That means that one murder should then change the template of every state after the fact. Come on. Let's be serious. And I've already stepped off the George Zimmerman case. So what I'm talking about is your right to bear arms. You're saying that should no longer be a constitutional right. Is that what you're saying? Or let me ask you, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, like, man, people like him don't deserve to be in the same qualification as me, a licensed armed security guard.
Oh, you know what, Derek, the idea is to make sure that people don't slip through the cracks, but we do not need stricter gun laws. That's my argument. My argument is what she's trying to do is to get rid of the stand your ground law. How do you feel about what I said about some people suggesting that if somebody breaks into your house with a gun, that you should leave your own home and not defend it? Do you agree with that?
Of course, that's what the castle law is made for. But, you know, like I said, but when
but
it was
do you agree with it?
Expanded it to, oh, trust me. I expect to go in my house and if you're somebody that I don't know, I have the right to blow you away. That's no doubt about that. You know what I'm saying? Shoot. Hey. I understand that part. But, you know, when they expanded the law, see,
I don't know why I'm losing you, Dark. You're in a bad place. Let's go to Jason.
Dude, like I said, dude, I'm an armed security guard. I would never do what George Zimmerman do.
Again, you're talking about George Zimmerman, and what I'm talking about is a broader situation, and that is strict. This is a woman taking her personal incident, and she is asking for regulation on a broader scale based upon it.
They let an idiot shoot.
Who cares about that, Derek? The bottom line is whether or not her personal incident should therefore affect every member of every citizen of the United States. And I'm asking,
At worst comes to worst, this guy's guilty of negligent homicide,
Derek,
man.
Are you
this
missing what I just asked you? Did you miss what I just asked you? How can you tell me that one person's personal story it should be allowed to affect the rest of the country? Why? You believe that?
This is like, you know, James Brady got shot in the head with Ronald Reagan, right? So there's no need for a Brady law. Everybody should just be able to
first
go
of
to
all,
store,
the
pick up a gun.
Bill, no. The Brady bill doesn't say that you can't own a gun. It just makes it gives you stricter laws.
That makes it so that you can get a background check on some of these people, man. But James Brady only got shot in the head once, right?
I'm not disputing that we should find out what a person's background is before they get a gun. I'm not disputing that. But what she's asking for are stricter gun laws than that.
It's got to be stricter, dude. They can't let everybody get a gun, man.
Well, before I go to James, then, what should be the stricter law?
I don't know, man. You know,
you got no answer.
Let me change that. Possibly they should have psychological exam. You know, you know when I had to get my armed security license, they made me.
Okay, I agree with you with the psychological exam. There should be not somebody who got out of a...
Hold on a second now. When I got my armed security license, they made me spend an extra $50 to take a little psychological test. And they sent it in to a doctor, and, you know, he said, I'm not crazy. So, hey, actually, somebody said, I'm not crazy, Reese. You know? So, maybe somebody should have gave George this.
We don't know whether or not George Zimmerman was psychotic, and there's nothing to suggest that at this point anyway. But hold on, let's go to James, and let's see where he is on this. Welcome to back to the show, James. It's been a bit.
How you doing? Thank you. It's been a bit, yes, and I missed you guys.
Oh, no problem. We missed you, too.
I just wanted to make sure, you know, you got a word in edgewise once in a while. It is your show.
Thank you.
So... But I really don't think stricter gun laws are going to make a difference anyway. I mean, getting back to your original question, does one person of personal experience dictate that kind of reaction? Well, when doesn't it? All right, one person's personal experience has dictated all the reactions so far.
Yeah, but it was unwarranted. First of all, the only reaction that people have gotten right now is what I'm saying is that the worst part about this campaign by, you know, this advocacy group and Mayor Michael Bloomberg is the fact that they're taking a tragedy that took place that's a part of our lexicon, that's, you know, part of the conversation, and then using her tragedy and the heartstrings of those who believe that Trayvon was gunned down innocently and then trying to get people to change policy. And that is disingenuous based on this. I mean, just based on that
alone is disingenuous. You can't ask people to change the way that we do business because of some random incident. It is random. George Zimmerman should not, nor Trayvon Martin, should then dictate the way the rest of us live. It shouldn't happen like that.
Why not? It's happened with Tom, with Brady. It's happened with others.
That's how these things get set.
There's a flash point.
The James Brady incident, the James Brady bill, all right? The Brady bill simply happened. Why? It happened because someone like, what's his name? Why am I forgetting his name now? How can I forget his name?
Whatever his name is, the fact of the matter is that at some point there was
John
a flash point.
John Hinckley, because John Hinckley was obviously mentally disturbed, was able to get a gun, which is the reason why we changed the law. They found out and they did a thorough investigation. How was he able to get a gun legally? It turned out that they did not, they did not do a background check. So they changed the law to say, hey, look, we're not stopping you from getting a gun, but we want you to be able to get a gun so you can protect yourself. It's your right to bear arms. But we want to make sure that you're fully capable of properly and justifiably discharging a weapon if needed, that you're not some lunatic just running around shooting people. We can't stop people from being lunatics. They're going to turn into a lunatic when they do. But we can't all of a sudden put shackles on everyone and completely disregard the Constitution. And that's my problem with this, is that people have a fervent disregard of the Constitution. You don't even recognize that the Constitution is put there to protect you from your government. Now you want the government to tell you you can't bear arms. You want the government to be able to control what you can and cannot have.
Look, what I'm saying is, getting back to the point was, either way, and no matter what the justification was, there is still a flashpoint. A galvanizing instance that set off the rest. All right? And otherwise, who would care?
I'm sorry, but as far as I'm concerned, the shooting of an unarmed teenager in a Florida suburb is not enough. I'm sorry.
Not enough?
Yeah,
not enough.
No one
is saying that they're telling us that we can't have guns. It's saying there's stricter ways of going about it. All right? And
what could be more stricter than a background check for 3 days?
Background check for 3 days. Well, you know what? Guess what? It's not having that much of an effect, is it? The bad guys are still getting more guns, Reese.
Illegally.
Illegally.
In places where it's harder for you to get a gun. They're getting them illegally in places where it's harder for you to get a gun. That's what the deal is. Okay?
All right.
It's always,
getting back to my original statement. I don't think that stricter gun laws are going to make much of a difference. It's only going to make it easier for the black market to make money.
No, it's not. No, and that's bull. Derek, please help me. Tell me at least
how. Because if you can't do it legally, who are you going to go to?
Hold on. Listen to me. Okay, check this out. If a thug knows, right, that the people in his city can't get guns, don't have guns. And they know that if they bring them into that city illegally, they've got the upper hand on law-abiding citizens who can no longer defend themselves. Is that right or wrong? Is that a fact or not?
All right. Now, what's going to – well, yeah, I'm sure that's
now
going
think
to
about
be
that. Think
several
about that. A law-abiding citizen wants to get a gun, but they know that his town has stricter gun laws and he doesn't want to go through the red tape to get a gun. Just to get a gun to defend myself, I got to go through this and this and this and this and this. A thug, on the other hand, he's got no interest in getting his gun legally, so he gets his illegally, and he can buy them anywhere on the street from some guy illegally. And he knows he has the upper hand because when he breaks into your home, 9 times out of 10, that person's home doesn't have a gun because he knows that the state has strict gun laws and they know that they're unarmed. So they're left to their own devices.
Well, strict, just because it's a strict gun law, I mean, it's not like excluding everyone. Just, I mean.
Now look, you know what? Reese has a point from that perspective.
Go on. I know I have a point.
I know. Well, I'm not saying he doesn't have a point. All I'm saying is it's still
that
same person. Can I finish my thought?
Go on. All
right, that same.
I said go ahead.
Okay. That same person who's saying, well, you know what, I can't get it through this sentence, this avenue, will go to the people that the bad guys are buying guns from. Well, if they can get it from a bad guy, you know, if they can get it, so can I.
But see,
basically,
hold on, James. Wait.
Unregistered guns all over the place now.
But, James, see, you're wrong there. See, a law-abiding citizen is not going to go to someone who's selling them illegally unless he's desperate.
A law-abiding citizen, all right? But again, as you said, law-abiding citizen who's frustrated, and if all the bad guys got guns, there's no way I'm taking the chance.
Well, no, I appreciate what it
is. Seriously. That's the one thing that always bothered me about living in New York. They make it so hard to get a gun.
Exactly. They make it difficult for you to get a gun, even if you're a law-abiding citizen.
I don't have a criminal background, you know, and you know, like I said, they make it, everybody tells me it would be almost impossible.
I know that still would be almost impossible for me, and even though I've never had I've never had a felony. I was militarily trained, and
but
I still have to go through a song and dance.
You know, like I said, I moved back to Florida, man. It's like, oh, you're not a criminal? Hey, shoot, you know, three-day background check. You know, they said if you get a consent.
Listen, what I'm saying is what's happening nowadays.
The thing is, I do security, and you know, one of the problems I do security is, you know, it's one of those,
What'd you say, Derek? Why am I missing
it? Hotel, you know, the extended stay hotel, and you know, we got a little gang that lives in there. They call them.
What are they called?
I think Derek is losing his connection, but that's how you sound sometimes.
Anyway, but see, the thing about it is, you know, I know all those guys are packing. You know.
Yeah,
Are you fully signaled up?
Yeah, I'm signaled up. I'm good.
No, I'm talking about Derek.
Derek, you're fading back and forth out. But what's the name of the gang that you said that?
The name. They call themselves. Anyway, like I said, I know all those guys. You know, and shoot, you know, me doing security, I'm over here like, man, shoot, you know, I feel good that, you know, I walk around.
We keep losing it, dude.
A person that goes to the gun range every month. I mean, it was weird, you know. 2 days ago, there was a shooting. Right, let me see. 3 days ago.
Derek, you got to get in a better signal. He is completely out. I'm gonna go back to him in a second. All right. What I want to do is I want to take a break because we're getting towards the top of the hour anyway. When we come back, I got to get into Sarah Palin. That's important, man. I got to get into that. But you know what? What I'm going to do at the top of the hour, and I'm going to try actually. If you can, JC, can you do it? I don't know if you can do it. It might take you a lot faster than me. What I want you to do is go to the Daily – JC, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. What's up?
Okay, go to thedailycaller.com. I want you to search the Ann Coulter article on African Americans and gun control. Just put Ann Coulter, C-O-U-L-T-E-R, and it should be a gun control article on the Daily Caller about that. Just click me on instant message so I can get the article up. And we'll come back. Coulter, it's A-N-N, it's Ann, not A-N-N-E.
The
Coulter's,
Daily Caller, okay.
Yeah, the Daily Caller website. And there's an article that you wrote about gun control rights. And what the anti-gun lobby has been doing to African Americans since the Dred Scott decision back in the 1800s. And the idea was, and the breakdown of this story, and we'll talk about it when we get back, but the breakdown was that African Americans were trying to fight themselves from the Klan. So what legislation did was, and by the way, the NRA, the National Rifle Association, was going out trying to recruit African Americans to join the NRA, so that, and of course, fight for their right to bear arms. But members of the Democratic Party and the Klan did everything to fight black people from being able to arm themselves legally so that they could be terrorized. So I want you to find that article. It's in the Daily Caller. Just search Ann Coulter and guns or gun control. It should be in there. We'll go to the top.
Is the racism of gun control laws?
That's the one. Send it to me via instant message so that after the top of the hour we can come back. We'll be back at Reese on the Radio.
We're not, you know, exactly the Washington Post, okay?
No. No, we're not. We run stupid headlines because we think they're funny.
Mm-hmm.
We run maimings on the front page because we got good art. And I spend 3 weeks bitching about my car because it sells papers. But at least it's the truth. As far as I can remember, we never, ever, ever knowingly got a story wrong. Until tonight.
Television's a goddamn amusement park! Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We're in the boredom-killing business. So if you want the truth, go to God. Go to your gurus. Go to yourselves. Because that's the only place you're ever going to find any real truth. So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off right now. Turn them off and leave them off. Turn them off right in the middle of a sentence I'm speaking to you now. Turn them off.
Come on.
All the humanity. All the...
Mary had a little lamb in Jesus' white as snow. And everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool.
Ah!
I never once said, Nagada.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
It's Reese on the Radio. Welcome back. 2 minutes after the hour on this, May 11th, 2012. It is the end of your week. Don't forget, we got a British invasion of the Friday Night Dance Party coming up tonight. JC got me in this mood yesterday. He played Say a Prayer for Me Now by Duran Duran, which I was totally... By the way, I got an email by Julie, JC, just to let you know, on a personal level, she loves the fact that you played that. Last night. She was very excited that you played that
song. Oh, the new bumpers that I've got in now are ridiculous.
Are they really? Okay, all right, good. I mean, that is one of my favorite songs, or melodically, it's one of my favorite songs ever by Duran Duran. By the way, I heard that Duran Duran is going to be performing the opening ceremony of the London Games this year.
Can't wait.
Yeah, so that ought to be fun. Okay, so when we were talking about this in the last break, and I'm hoping Derek will come back because he had to break off for a little bit. This is an article by Ann Coulter let me see what date this was. This was back pretty much about a month ago, April 18th, I apologize, by Ann Coulter. The title of the article is The Racist History of Gun Control Laws. She writes, liberals have leapt on the shooting death of Trayvon Martin in Florida to push for the repeal of stand your ground laws and to demand tighter gun control. MSNBC's Karen Finney blamed the same people who stymied gun regulation at every point. This would be like demanding more funding for the General Services Administration after seeing how its employees blew taxpayer money
on a party weekend in Las Vegas. We don't know the facts, but yet let's assume that the conclusion of MSNBC is leaping to is accurate. George Zimmerman stalked a small black child and murdered him in cold blood just because he was black. If that were true, every black person in America should get a gun and join the National Rifle Association, America's oldest and most august civil rights organization. Apparently, it has occurred to no one because our excellent public education system ensures that no American under the age of 60 has the slightest notion of our country's history. Gun laws were originally promulgated by Democrats to keep guns out of the hands of blacks. This allowed the Democratic policy of slavery to proceed with fewer bumps and, after the Civil War, allowed the Democratic Ku Klux Klan to menace and murder black Americans with little resistance. Contrary to what literaries believe, the KKK was an outgrowth of the Democratic Party with overlapping membership roles. The Klan was to the Democrats what the American Civil Liberties Union is today. Not every Democrat is an ACLUer, but every ACLUer is a Democrat. Same with the Klan. She goes on to write, in 1640, the very first gun control law ever enacted on these shores was passed in Virginia. It provided that blacks, even free men, could not own guns. Chief Justice Robert Taney's infamous opinion in Dred Scott versus Sanford circularly argued that blacks could not be citizens because if they were citizens, they would have the right to own guns. It would give them full liberty, he said, to keep and carry arms wherever they went. With logic like that, Republicans eventually had to fight a civil war to get Democrats to give up slavery. Alas, they were Democrats, so they cheated. After the war, Democratic legislators enacted black codes, denying black Americans the right of citizenship, such as rather crucial one of bearing arms, while other Democrats, sometimes the same Democrats, founded the Ku Klux Klan. For more than 100 years, Republicans have aggressively supported arming blacks so they could defend themselves against Democrats. The original draft of the Anti-Klan Act of 1871 passed at the urging of Republican President Ulysses S. Grant, made it a federal felony to deprive any citizen of the United States of any arms or weapons he may have in his house or possession for the defense of his person, family, or property. This section was deleted from the final bill only because it was deemed both beyond Congress's authority and superfluous, inasmuch as the rights of citizenship included in the right to bear arms. Under authority of the Anti-Klan Act, President Grant deployed the U.S. military to destroy the Klan and pretty nearly completed the job. Now, if you pardon me, I'm going to go to part two of this article, which is apparently going to take me a minute because I've got a lot of windows running. I apologize at the time. Okay. But the Klan had a few resurgences in the early mid-20th century. Curiously, whenever the Klan became a political force, gun control laws would suddenly appear on the books. Now, and that's a fact, folks. That's what it is. And when I read this, I was going, you know what? Now that I look back in history, anybody remember the Black Panther movement? Black Panthers had their guns taken away from them. Didn't they? They sure enough did. Anyway, this will give you an idea of how gun control laws work. Following the firebombing of his house in 1956, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who was, among other things, a Christian minister, applied for a gun permit. But the Alabama authorities found him unsuitable. A decade later, he won a Nobel Peace Prize. How's that may issue gun permit policy working for you? The NRA opposed these discretionary gun permit laws and proceeded to grant NRA charters for blacks who sought to defend themselves from Klan violence, including the great Civil War hero, Robert F. Williams. A World War II Marine veteran, Williams returned home to Monroe, North Carolina, to find the Klan riding high, beating, lynching, and murdering blacks at will. No one would join the NAACP for fear of Klan reprisals. Williams became president of the local chapter and increased membership from 6 to more than 200. But it was not until he got a charter from the NRA in 1957 and founded the Black Armed Guard that the Klan got their comeuppance in Monroe. Williams repeatedly thwarted a violent Klan attacks and described it in his stirring book, Negroes with Guns. In one crucial battle, the Klan seized the home of a black physician and his wife, but Williams and his armed black guard stood sentry and repelled the larger, cowardly force. And that was the end of it. As the Klan found out, it was so much fun when the rabbit, it's not so much fun when the rabbits got the gun. The NRA's proud history of fighting the Klan has been airbrushed out of the record for those who were complicit with the KKK, Jim Crow, and racial terror, to wit, the Democrats. In the preface of Negroes with Guns, Williams writes, "I have asserted the right of Negroes to meet the violence of the Ku Klux Klan by armed self-defense, and have acted on it has always been an accepted right of Americans, as the American history of our Western states prove that were the law unable or unwilling to enforce order, the citizens can and must act in self-defense against lawless violence." End quote.
So there's your history of the Klan, the NRA, and the gun rights. I'll let you guys go. Please, proceed. I'll let you do it until the rest of the end of the break in another 10, 15 minutes.
What do you want us to say?
I just want to know. You're talking about now you got a whole bunch of Democrats screaming for gun rights, for gun laws, talking about expanding the gun laws.
Henry.
And here it is. Here it is, a breakdown of the Klan trying to fight to keep you from getting guns. The Klan's racist history to tell Negroes, don't arm yourselves.
Okay. All right. Now, first and foremost, the Klan isn't running around putting crosses on people's lawns anymore, so I don't understand. So, that was then. This is now.
Don't you find it odd, James, that the Democrats were fighting against blacks getting guns in the 1600s, and they're now, here's Michael Bloomberg and other Democrats fighting for blacks to keep guns out of their hands again?
And it's not just blacks, is it? I thought it was supposed to be tougher gun laws, period.
Who do you think's going to have a harder time getting a gun, James?
Well,
go ahead, Derek.
You know, don't get me wrong now. No, we can't remember, back in the days, yes, the Klan was part of the Democratic Party, you're right. But you remember,
Derek, where are you? You in a tunnel? An elevator?
Okay. The Klan became Republicans, and the Democrats are taking over.
Derek. You don't get – no. You don't get to make a blanket statement like that without proof. When did the Klan become Republican?
Reese, trust me.
You didn't answer my question, Derek.
The Ku Klux Klan did not put Barack Obama in office, okay?
Derek, if I may, seriously. You kill puppies. I don't have to have any proof. All I have to do is say it. I have the power of the microphone. You kill puppies. I don't have to prove it. I don't have to prove it at all. If that's the case, Derek, I'm guilty of the crime that they're accusing me of. If they just get to say it, we don't get to prove anything, Derek. We just say it. Tell me a breakdown.
Talk about the ACLU. Okay, let me tell you something. I'm telling you something that Bill Maher, remember, Bill Maher is white, okay? And what he said.
Well, don't cut off now. What did Bill Maher say?
A Republican. Okay.
No, okay. I know what Bill Maher said. Bill Maher said that if you're a Klansman, you're probably a Republican. Based on what, though? He didn't offer any evidence of it. He didn't offer any evidence of it, Derek. He just said.
Probably, and I'm gonna see signs up there that says "Klans for Obama." I mean, the Klan for KKK for Obama. Give me a break, dude.
Derek, the Klan is no more. If you're talking about this current state of a group that is no longer relevant, I mean, they're relevant.
They're just like the new Black Panther Party, dude. Get rid of them.
Exactly. I'll agree with that wholeheartedly. I agree with that wholeheartedly. They are just like the new Black Panther Party. They're completely irrelevant. So are these Aryan nations, you know, the white power movements, but that's true. But we are talking about whether or not the Klan was pretty much a creation by the Democratic Party, and we're talking about what the Democratic Party has stood for.
Yes, they were. Dude, I watched Boardwalk Empire. I know that the Republicans used to be for Black Panther.
Oh, my God, don't help us anymore, Derek.
Black people to vote for Republicans. You know, but that was like in 1920, dude. You know what I'm saying? 1921, man.
Also a TV show, Derek. You do realize this, right?
Derek will tell you that it's based on true events.
Yeah.
It's loosely based on, but it's highly they said this themselves.
Okay.
Yeah, but one of the things I'm saying is this, Derek, and this is the point that I'm trying to make, is that we're looking at a party that has found a way to, as far as today, to maneuver itself into this ideology, and we're talking about the 20th century, Derek. We're not talking about the 1800s anymore. We're talking about the 21st century,
bro.
No, we're talking about the 20th century with 1964 and the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and 65. People have got this belief system that Democrats didn't do everything within their power to stop African Americans from becoming residents or citizens of these United States with the same rights as everyone else. And we know that's a fact. The Jim Crow law, as many Democrats now always say, they want to take us, the Republicans want to take us back to the Jim Crow law. But if I was a Republican, I would just simply say, yeah, that's your law. We don't want to return it back to what you did. What would make you think that we want to be Democrats? We don't want to be Democrats. If I was a Republican who was running for office and somebody like Deborah Wasserman Schultz, who's from your state, Derek, if she said they're going to return us to Jim Crow laws, the first thing I would say was, do your history, Debbie. The bottom line is that the Jim Crow laws came out of your party. And that's your party platform.
Okay. Let's see now. So by your way of thinking, no Jewish person should ever go to Germany.
Negative. Negative.
I mean, huh?
Negative. I would never ever suggest that no Jewish person should go to Germany. That's their history.
Well, that's their history. But, all right, and again, let's reiterate the word history. Fact of the matter is, what was then is not what is now, okay? Just because, you know, Germany had the Nazi Party and, you know, it was, and they tried to eradicate the Jews. You can't say now that Jews shouldn't go to Germany. But what you're trying to see is because
of what... I would contrast that by saying two words to you. Muslim Brotherhood. Muslim Brotherhood? Yeah, the Muslim Brotherhood formed in the 1920s who pledged allegiance to Adolf Hitler. They did. They pledged allegiance to Adolf Hitler. The Muslim Brotherhood is now about to have governmental rights in Egypt. And about to have governmental rights in Libya, and the Muslim Brotherhood is a known terrorist organization that wants to wipe Israel off the map. So there's no change. There's never been a change. So you can't say there's never been a change. Look up the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood exists today.
What about the Muslim Brotherhood?
The Muslim Brotherhood just recently paid a visit to the White House and met with the President of the United States.
Steal this away from nothing that I even brought up. You know, again,
the past is the past.
Well, there's always going to be something. But what you could get away with back then, you can't get away with nowadays. All right? It's just not going to happen. All right? Yes. All right? If the Democratic Party started in such a way that it was actually outwardly and boldly trying to keep blacks from becoming citizens, guess what? It didn't work.
Well, James, if you were really paying attention to the Democratic Party over the past 20 years, you know that what Democrats have done to African Americans as a whole, we're talking within the last 50 years, what it is that they've done with African Americans is harmed them politically and harmed them socially and harmed them financially. And
what are you
talking
about, man? Dude, we're the first black president in office, man.
Black president's got nothing to do with the ideology. It's got nothing to do with the ideology. It's got nothing to do with the platform. The platform is to keep African Americans subservient to the federal government. That's the platform.
Lord.
Really?
And guess what? Didn't work.
What do you mean? What do you mean it didn't work?
It didn't work because, you know what, you have more people nowadays, all right, you have more people on the straight and narrow and actually trying to be forthright and upfront people who are a boon to their society. Then you have these the people that they're trying to say is that are just trying to be leeches, all right? It's much smaller than the whole population of the race.
That's completely
now, just
untrue.
Because this small population is played up doesn't mean that, you know, everyone is just trying to be, is either trying to be subservient or not subservient, but or subservient to the federal government or allowing themselves to be so.
There are more people within the African American community who believe that the government should take care of them. Is that right or wrong?
No.
Oh, my God. You know, come on.
What?
When you sit over here and just talk about
how dare
numbers,
you say that?
Wait.
Are you telling me that the African-American community does not agree or not believe in socialism?
Reese, are you sitting over here telling me that there's higher numbers of blacks or higher numbers of whites?
Well, there's, of course, larger number of whites, but we're talking specifically about the African-American community. Has the African American community completely folded to the idea of larger government?
No.
Really?
Not at all. No.
Really? So the African American community does not believe that it should continue to suck off the teat of the American government. That they deserve something from their government. They do not believe that.
No, the majority of the African American community does not. No.
Majority, dude. The majority.
Yes, they do. The majority of the American African American, the African American in this country believes that the government should take care of them, that the government should be larger. The government should have programs. The government should make education better. They believe that they should take care of them, cradle to grave. More African Americans believe in the nanny state. They believe in health care. They do. Don't they believe in
government? Hold on one second. The government should make education better. They should.
Wait. So you don't believe that competition? Are you telling me that the privatization of education? The privatization of education would not make better competition.
Dude, I...
No, I don't.
Well, how can you believe that? Because charter schools overwhelmingly do better than public education.
They said that the public school system in Barbados is better than the private school education in America, dude. The public school education in Barbados.
They have less. They have less citizens, Derek. And you're talking about some third world island.
Wait a minute. So you have less people. You don't have to have. I don't understand. How does less people equate to a better education system?
Simple, James. They don't have to deal with the overcrowding in public schools. No, they don't. And the private education in this country, does far better than the public education in this country. Forget about Barbados.
Of course it does. So why can't our public education do better?
I'll tell you why. Because teachers get tenure. And when you get tenure, that means you get job security. That means it doesn't matter how your children performed in public schools if you can never lose your job. There's no competition. There's security. That's the difference. In every privatized business, think about it. In every privatized business, you have the incentive to do better when your competition is doing better. That's what competition breeds.
Private schools have tenure as well.
No, they do not. They do not. You can be fired in a private institution if you do not give results. There's no tenure in private schools. There's no tenure in charter schools. Because charter schools have to compete for their children by higher test scores.
Dude, that charter system is crap, too. You notice we didn't have that charter school.
Did you see Waiting for Superman? Did you see Waiting for Superman? Every private school that was featured in there does better than their public schools. And who are the only people who rallied against that movie and against charter schools? Union members, union reps, union presidents. They were the ones who rallied against it because they don't want the competition. They believe in public school system, they believe in protecting the teachers before they protect the kids.
Man, look how well that's turning out.
Well, exactly. But remember, what happens if you get tenure at a school? Barring that you beat up a kid or you sexually assault a child, you don't get fired. It doesn't matter what the school's results are. It doesn't matter if the test grades fail.
Okay. But isn't tenure is something to reach for, so not everybody can get it, and not everybody does.
No. The only way you get tenure is by being there for 3 years. It has nothing to do with your test grade.
For 3 years?
Yeah, 3 years. After 3 years being the teacher, you get tenure. You can apply for tenure. You can apply, and if you get tenure, you can't be fired. That's what your union does to protect you. That's why the teachers' union, the National Education Association, is one of the largest unions in the country. It's got 3.5 million members. They can't be fired. It is a teacher protection. Doesn't matter what they do. Doesn't matter if the test scores are horrible. And you know it, and I know it. How many times have you heard those infamous words by some of these kids that their teachers say, I don't care whether or not you pass or fail, I'm still getting a paycheck.
I didn't hear that when I went. I went to private school.
You went to private school. But, James, you know that that's been said, right? How many times have you heard it, James?
I've never heard that. Right?
Whoa. You're telling me you've never heard a kid say that their teacher, you never heard a story about a kid saying that his teacher said it doesn't matter.
Ever. I've never heard that. Ever.
Trust me. Look it up. In fact, if you don't believe me, go look at Project Veritas by George O'Keefe, where he videotaped teachers in New Jersey who were part of the union at their convention in Atlantic City, where he caught teachers on tape screaming about Governor Chris Christie and talking about how it is that they're protected by their union. And they don't even care about the kids.
Oh, boy. I don't know, man. I ain't living in New Jersey.
Well, the bottom line is that's what they do.
Yeah.
That's what they do. And a lot of teachers, you know, because I had some pretty good ones and I've had some horrible ones, too. But a lot of teachers are hamstrung by their own laws. All right, so it's almost like, you know what? If I could go someplace, I would, but you know, why even try? Or because there's this impetus that, you know, they get no support from their own infrastructure. So yeah, you're going to get a whole lot of apathetic teachers.
No,
when they struggling, they go to their infrastructure and they're hamstrung.
What we have is a bunch of teachers who are taking care of themselves. That's the way it works. That's exactly the way it works. It's that simple. Anyway, we'll take a break.
Teachers just like the rest of society.
Yeah. When we get back, we'll talk about Sarah Palin, and then, of course, we'll get into our weekly little tidbit that we call the Friday Night Dance Party. It's Resona Radio. Stick around. Stay right where you are. Don't go anywhere. Resona Radio returns in a moment right here on blogtalkradio.com.
The Obama attack machine has started, spending millions to sling mud for oil at Mitt Romney. Why? Because in the five states where Obama's attacking Romney, gas prices have roughly doubled. But Obama's mud can't cover up his failed energy policies, policies that are hurting small businesses and working families. America deserves solutions, not attack ads covering up Obama's failures. 4 years of failed leadership are all we can afford. Send a message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Dude Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hi, how you doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're Robert Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, Reese, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States. States.
This is the real state of our union. But you won't hear stories like those at President Obama's address tonight. The unemployed don't get tickets to sit next to the First Lady. Instead tonight, the President will do what he does best. He'll give a nice speech.
The idea of America endures.
A lot of memorable phrases in it.
That our future is hopeful.
But he won't give you the hard numbers.
Our journey goes forward. And the state of our union is strong.
Three years ago, we measured candidate Obama by his hopeful promises and his slogans. Today, President Obama has amassed an actual record of debt, decline, and disappointment. I'd use the State of the Union to lay out an agenda that will get our country back on track and get our fiscal house in order. We need to nominate someone who is an experienced leader, who has the qualities of leadership, the character, the judgment, the seriousness, the sobriety, the capacity demonstrated time and time again as a leader to help guide our party at a critical time and make sure that we hold on to the House, that we capture the Senate, and that we get back the White House and restore to America what is rightfully ours. A great nation, united, free, and prosperous for our kids and for their kids. Thank you so very much.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Resona Radio, on blogtalkradio.com, weeknights on blogtalkradio.com. All over my face. What is a boy to do?
President Barack Obama named himself one of the country's four best presidents. Better than George Washington, John F. Kennedy, and even Ronald Reagan. But Mr. President was just being modest. He's in fact America's best president at piling on debt. So good that he has managed to pile on nearly as much debt as all the previous presidents combined. All he needed was just 4 years to outspend 220 years of history. We can't afford four more years of America's best president.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on BlogTalkRadio.com.
Come on, players, stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating. Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby. Twinkle, twinkle.
On the Radio, and we're back. 36 minutes after the hour right here on Blog Talk Radio, May the 11th, 2012. Hope everybody has a great Mother's Day, whatever it is that you're doing with Mom. Have a good time. Let me get into this quick story before we get into the Friday night dance party. Bristol Palin is getting some fire over her gay marriage comments. It turns out that she tweeted something about Barack Obama making his big announcement this week. She said, quote, "I guess we could be glad that Malia and Sasha aren't younger, or perhaps today's press conference might have been about appointing Dora the Explorer as Attorney General because of her success in stopping Swiper the Fox," Palin wrote. And, of course, everybody went out and, of course, was upset. She doesn't make any comments about gay marriage or whatever. But, you know, I guess she was making a point about why did we have to have a press conference about his gay stance. Samantha Ronson, who's the ex-girlfriend of Lindsay Lohan, came back and said of Palin's mother-father comment, "Really, Bristol Palin, how's your kid doing? Why are we attacking her child?" Jersey Shore star JWoww first tweeted, "Bristol should keep her uneducated, ignorant mouth shut. Coming from you, JWoww!" "If you're living in the past, you wouldn't have a kid without marriage. Hashtag hypocrite. It's 2012. She followed up with another tweet saying, "My best friend will be getting married one day. And not just have a civil union with his man. Stop hating people." Openly gay blogger Perez Hilton, who was clever enough to say, "I think we need to give Bristol Palin a good message. Girlfriend needs to relax." Sherry Shepherd of The View, who actually had a tamer view as well as Perez Hilton, said, "Sarah Palin educated Bristol, and not blaming Bristol, but I'm blaming Bristol being young and not exercising good judgment." I don't know what that even supposed to mean. But, of course, a lot of people, you know, "Oh, I guess she's not allowed to have." Of course, then people are attacking her because she's a single mom, you know, but, you know, that's how that goes. I mean, are we not even allowed to comment on Barack Obama's decision to support gay marriage? Guys?
Huh?
Are we not allowed to comment on Barack Obama? Hey, James, good question before we go into Friday Night Dance Party. You answer this for me, seriously. Do you think the black community is going to not vote or still support Barack Obama, even though he came out for gay marriage?
You know, I knew you were going to ask me that question.
I had to, dude. I had to.
I knew you were going to ask me that question.
I'll give it to you the same way I gave it to JC. On a scale of 1 to 5, 5 means they'll show up in droves, 1 meaning they just won't show up, and of course, probably 0 meaning 0, of course. Where do you put that level? Like, do you think people
I say that even though there's going to be a drop, I don't think it's going to be significant. So I'd say somewhere around 3.5, maybe 4.
Okay, so you still think they'll show up, so you think that there are people who are really strong about this gay marriage thing in the black community that won't show up, but most of the people will show up?
Yes.
All right, that's fair. I'll give you that. I don't think it's going to affect at all. I'm actually giving it a 4.
Because the thing is, even the people who are going to drop off are, you know, it's just a deal killer with them, there's still a lot more gay black men than there are gay black gay haters.
Yeah. Actually, you know what I think it is, James? You know what I really think it is?
What's that?
I think that African Americans have no ethics. And I don't
have no ethics?
Yeah, no ethics and no principle. I don't think that they vote anything based on principle. I think if they stand out and they flat out disagree with gay marriage, and if they don't agree with that, they don't care whether or not their black president is a flip-flopper or has no and doesn't follow the quote-unquote man and woman are the only people who should allow to be married sort of tenets. I don't believe that, even though he claims he's a Christian, I don't believe that black people even care. In fact, Van Jones went so much as to say, Van Jones was the former Green Czar in the White House, came out and said on This Week with George Stephanopoulos, I can't repeat it enough, he said, black people wouldn't care if Obama came out as gay. They'd still vote for him because he's black, and that's why I believe that black people just don't have enough principle.
Gee, thanks. Really?
Well, it's a fact, James. It's a fact.
It's a fact. So yeah. I have no principles. Okay, thank you. Really,
well,
really.
No.
Thanks.
I'm not dealing with black people individually. I believe that you have principles.
You said black people. I do happen to be black, right? I am part of that subset, am I not?
Okay.
And you are too, as a matter of fact.
Well, I have principle, but I'm going to lump you in with the Negroes.
Okay.
That's just me. You know what time it is?
You know what time it is. It's time for the Friday Night Dance Party.
That's right, Friday Night Dance Party. It is the British Invasion Edition. And I don't know, I'm going to see whether or not anybody can figure out. JC, James, anybody else listening, send a list to ReeseOnTheRadio@yahoo.com. ReeseOnTheRadio@yahoo.com. If you can identify the name and the title of every song we play, 4 songs, every song that we play, I'll put any amount of money. Nobody gets the last song.
Are you going to hang out till the end of it?
Oh, yeah, I'm going to hang out till the end of it. Just, yeah, send me an email with the name of all 4 songs. the names of the song and, of course, the artist who performed them. It's the British Invasion version of Friday Night Dance Party. Enjoy.
Say what? Peek at your screen. Peek at your screen. I'll name them as you go along.
Well, you made them.
No, I didn't.
No, I made them. I'm the one who put them together.
Oh, he did.
I'm the one. So we're going to see whether
I did bumpers.
That's right. You did the bumpers. So anyway, we'll go into it. We'll see you guys on Monday. Have a great Mother's Day. Have a great weekend. It's Reese on the Radio.
You know what time it is. It's time for the Friday Night Dance Party. We'll be right back.
Mother's tired, she needs a rest. The kids are playing up downstairs. Sister's playing in her sleep. Brother's got the date to keep, you can't hang around. And it's usually quite loud. Our mum, she's so house proud. Nothing ever slows her down, and a mess is not allowed. Our house, in the middle of our street. With a small kid, she's the one they're going to miss in lots of ways.
Made of stone.